Good morning, evening, afternoon, listeners to another episode of The Circuit. I am Ben Beharin.
Greetings, Internet. I am Jay Goldberg.
So we've been getting questions. There's been a lot of commentary about the recent downturn in a lot of semi-stocks / AI-related stocks, and people asking, has the bubble popped? Is the sky falling? Now, we've on multiple episodes talked about, let's harken back to outsized AI expectations from a quarter ago, where we were concerned that people were like drastically calling for predicting the increase in some of these stocks' revenues to the point that expectations were too wild. To many, many episodes ago, was NVIDIA really overvalued, and can we justify their valuation based on AI gains at a 2-3x multiple? So none of this is terribly shocking. However, I do think there's some points worth going into about, why is there more volatility? I think this is an interesting conversation from two ways, which we'll look at it. I think the trader viewpoint and then the kind of buy side, longer term investor viewpoint. And then also from the somewhat right correction, or are we seeing some of these names return to a more appropriate valuation, even though still highly valued in their PE and their multiple? But obviously a lot of questions going into some of these things. So let's just sort of launch into it. Is this bubble popping? Is this correcting? Is this sky falling? I think I know where you stand, because I'm pretty sure you know where I stand, but I'll let you jump off the platform first.
Is the sky falling? 2 weeks ago, maybe three, we did an episode about the ways in which NVIDIA could be vulnerable. Yeah. Like, we're just trying to explore the case. And so today's Monday, April 22nd. We're recording from the 22nd. And one of the things we said in that was, like, one of the things I said was, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about NVIDIA, the company, because I said NVIDIA, the stock, is just completely unrelated. And so we had a whole episode about all the things that could go wrong with NVIDIA. None of those have happened. Like, it was 2 weeks ago. None of that has happened. But the stock is down, I think, 10%, 15% since then. Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, the stock and the company itself aren't necessarily moving in tandem. There's a disconnect. Because the stock market is just weird right now. And I think there's a lot of things going on that aren't necessarily directly related to NVIDIA's business prospects. And, you know, what do they call it? They used to call that animal spirits. Like, there's just weird forces moving about the stock market. And I think that explained part of the run in a lot of stocks. And I think that explains the activity we saw last week in a lot of these stocks, where there wasn't really any news, but investors just got tired of, you know, paying a premium, and they thought it was worth a little bit less. But there's nothing fundamental has changed.
Sure. I think what's interesting, and I'd made this point to a number of people, is, you know, just looking at some historical trends from stocks, or popular trendy stocks, where you actually saw more retail investors or traders get involved. And my concern with that had always been, you know, they're a little bit less predictable. You know, it's very, very hard. And you talk to folks on the buy side particularly, and they like somewhat predictable kind of fundamentals of news happens, earnings happen, we have a gauge, right? And it becomes very unpredictable. And so I had even said, you know, coming into some of these earnings quarters, even if a company has a really good quarter, I'm not sure how it will respond. And that's kind of what we talked about with the outsized AI expectations episode, where maybe they come in and they say, hey, revenue was up 15%, but these retail traders were expecting 30%. And so boom, right? It just goes, like, you just don't know. It's very, very hard. And so the volatility, I think, was kind of my bigger, broader concern of what was happening. And again, right, I think Supermicro was one of those that lifted on that. Obviously, NVIDIA, because, you know, outside of the weird controversy that happened last year, people recognized it was a trendy stock. It was getting an AI lift. And I think you saw a number of names. But even coming into this week, right, you look at Microsoft, you look at Google, who are probably going to have pretty good earnings on the base of cloud growth, they may not perform that well. Even though the business is growing, there might be more volatility or less, less anticipation of their fundamental value. And so that's the weirdest part to me to watch, is just volatility in an area where we haven't really seen this kind of volatility before.
Yeah. And I think if you look at the multiples that some of these stocks are trading for, once they get to those very high numbers, it's very, any small fluctuation in any sentiment can really whip the stock around, because they're trading at arguably inflated multiples, like historically high, way above historic averages, way above historic highs for some of these names. And I think you can make it, you could argue that NVIDIA deserves a great premium because they have all this stuff working in their favor. How high that is, though, is very much left up to the markets. And like you said, there's a ton of retail interest in NVIDIA and Supermicro. And we've been saying for a while, like, that's dangerous. Like, there are professional investors who are tracking this much more capably, closely than any retail investor can. And I think we sort of see that reflected in the market last week.
Yeah. So what are some of the other, I mean, I guess, where do things go from here? Because that's where, you know, like I said, I've been talking to some investors. I'm doing a segment later today on Yahoo on like kind of what to expect. And that was sort of my fundamental point to them was, you know, look, I don't know how the market's going to respond, because companies can have really good quarters and it might not be enough. And that's just so I wonder if are we slightly, and I don't think either of us believe, right, this AI bubble is popping, but are we seeing, I guess, a slight correction because perhaps people are either resetting their expectations? In fact, I saw a weird note today. I actually haven't seen, even though I get UBS emails that NVIDIA, AMD, Microsoft have been downgraded from overweight to neutral, which again, I think is weird. But if that's true, I wonder, like, do those things come because their perspective is, well, we might see some rebalancing, or the growth isn't as big as we expected, so we're more cautious in terms of, like, I'm just curious what some of those, is this rebalancing or recorrecting based on more assumptions or more information we have today we didn't 3 months ago?
So I think there's a couple things playing out on the sell side and the buy side. Right. Imagine you're a mutual fund manager and you're benchmarked against like the S&P 500. You have to own a lot of NVIDIA in your portfolio to keep up. Right. And you're a little bit stuck because so much of the market has been driven by NVIDIA stock. And even if you are starting to get data points that, oh, something is weakening, you still have to be in it because there's a lot of momentum. There's all these retail investors. And that's a dilemma for especially for the long onlys. The hedge funds can move a little bit more nimbly, but even there, they're still, you know, they want to own. I mean, this is, NVIDIA has driven so much of performance for a lot of people in the last year. So they have to own it. And then on the sell side, it's very, very hard for any sell sider to really gauge the whole market, or anybody to gauge the whole market, right? There's so many investors, right? So even the best sell side analyst who has the best data checks and is, you know, just come back from Asia and talked to all the ODMs, like they may feel that data points are strong, but here's the stock
right
falling apart because of momentum, because of, you know, fear in one sector. It's a tough position to, right? And like I said, when it's at these kinds of multiples, it's very, very difficult for all the professional investors, buy or sell side, to really know what to do. You're a little bit stuck. And so you're somewhat at the near term, you're at the whim of the mercy of the market, the whims of the market.
Right.
Right. So, in all of this, I've yet to hear any like substantive data points that we didn't know about.
Right.
6 weeks ago.
And I don't think anybody wise that I've talked to thinks that this is like a slowdown. I think there's some realizations that there was a lot of capital deployed to build some infrastructure. that to some degree, you know, we're up against supply chain constraints. And so that's kind of coming into saying, okay, how much of these things can we really ship? Should we better estimate what a reasonable growth looks like? I mean, but personally, like, I feel like it's better when things like this happen because I was getting very nervous about where things were. And I feel like, well, again, NVIDIA, whatever they're at today, 787, up 3% from where they were, is still a lot. It's better than 950, where then again, just more questions get raised about it, its fundamentals. So I think this is healthy, but at the same time, I'm also like, and I know this is a terrible perspective because, right, traders should be able to do what they do, but I hate, it's like, just get retail traders out of semi stocks because I hate the dynamic that they bring. And I'm sorry if I'm insulting you and you're a trader listening to our podcast, but it's true because yes, you should have the freedom to do that. But semis are so cyclical, so hard to understand, and it's so hard to model that it always makes me uncomfortable when any tech stock or a semi stock in particular becomes meme stockish.
I'll put it slightly differently. I would say that every company wants to have a healthy mix of investors active in their stock. What you don't want is any one particular category to be overweight.
Right, right.
Right. And I think what's happened with some of these names, probably NVIDIA, certainly Supermicro, is there was too much retail. I'm not opposed to retail investors being in semis, just recognize it's difficult. But I think so much of the momentum of the stock in the last 6-ish months have been sort of retail centric, that's where everyone got into trouble, right? Is because it was too heavily weighted on retail.
Right. Different dynamics. And then again, it just adds for an element of volatility. And that's kind of one of the things where, you know, there's been this question about, and I don't know if this somebody was just making this up on the Twitter sphere or if Jensen said something, but there was some speculation that they would split because they wanted more people in the stock. But the problem is every time you split, your cost comes down so that you can get, you just raise the opportunity for more individual investors to get in. And so a lot of companies don't split for that reason, to keep it high so that it stays a little bit more largely institution or serious buyer. But I don't know if that'll happen, but that again would just invite, I think, more volatility to a company like NVIDIA.
Stock splits are one of those weird things that from a textbook perspective should not matter at all, right? Worth the same, right? But somehow they do, right? You can buy 10 shares, you can buy 5 shares. It's still the same amount of money. It's just people, I guess that matters to some retail investors. But I don't know. I don't think it's long-term that significant. But I'll tell you, I do have a theory on what sort of is taking place, what may have been the peak, right? I noticed 2 weeks ago, the Humane AI pin hit the market, right? That's a little pin. You talk to it, you patch it, you talk to it, and it does things, right? And I remember seeing it at CES or hearing about it at CES. I'm thinking that's a clever idea, but it doesn't look like it's a product. Now that's actually in the market, it has been just savaged by the tech press. Like just like people, I've seen so many videos of people demoing it, and it just like has underwhelmed in a lot of senses. To the point that I think everyone's sort of piling on now, right? But I have to wonder if that didn't. I think that was the peak. That was the peak of the generative AI bubble, because. Mm-hmm. It brought home the fact that generative AI is interesting, but it's not quite capable of doing all the things we sort of want it to do. And you saw that with the Humane demos. And again, I don't want to pile on, but there are certain things it just can't do because there's certain things that generative AI isn't ready for. Right. And I think that crystallized some thinking about things that we've been talking about for a while here, which is most of the important things that are happening in neural network based machine learning today aren't fancy consumer apps.
Right.
It's under the hood stuff.
Right.
That stuff hasn't gone away, but it's also a very different growth trajectory for, at least for the near term, for anything touching AI. Sort of, you know, it's a smaller, less exciting piece of the market.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get those consumer apps some that point down the road. I don't want to dismiss that, but like, I think people are starting to realize that like AI isn't everything. It's still fairly limited in its impact.
Right. No, that's actually an interesting observation as to how something like AI Pin, and then maybe what we're going to see with this other company called Rabbit that does AI automation coming out this week, that was kind of peak hype cycle, because it demonstrated, to be honest with you, a point that we said, I think last week, that these things feel like they're moving fast, but it's not actually moving as fast as people think in terms of real world execution. And I've tried, you know, to temper down some of this. There is no like AI driven PC super cycle coming, or AI coming to smartphones is not going to create some like crazy upgrade cycle. Like, I'm on the under on all of those things, because again, when you try some of this stuff locally, you get across its limits very, very quickly. And it just shows you how picks and shovels, right, we still are, and how immature the software is, despite it feeling like it's moving very fast. And so I think those two things sit parallel to each other in an interesting way. And maybe you're right. Maybe people realize that. Maybe the correction is coming from something else. But that's the fundamentals of this that I think are important. We're still a long way away from where we need to be.
You actually said it 2 or 3 weeks ago. You said ChatGPT launched a year and a half ago, and nothing has happened in the last at least 6 months.
Yeah, right?
That you said that I can't remember when, but like 2 weeks ago. That thought has been haunting me, and I think it's percolated to the broader investor universe. So you called it, right? AI is moving, yet at the same time, it's not, right? There's been no major development of the kind that mattered to most people.
Right. And I think there's still this larger discussion. You know, Llama 3 came out. It's actually a very good model. Its multimodal capabilities are quite good. It's open source. And I think there's been a real healthy conversation around open source versus proprietary LLMs. How many LLMs are going to be? There's going to be, you know, how many foundational models can the market support? Like, we don't know the answers to these things, but I think I can guarantee that there will be less than there are today, but how much consolidation or simplification happens in these models, you know, we don't know. But I do think it's an important, you know, conversation. But even again, to this point, you look at where Llama 3 is and you see still some of its shortcomings. Again, kind of goes back to this point. Yes, it has increased capabilities. And whenever GPT-5 comes out, I assume it will have increased capabilities. But I just don't think those increased capabilities get to the point where people look at it and are like, you've just reinvented the space, you know? Like that, and I acknowledge that's very difficult to do. But I think we're seeing perhaps more iterative versions of these things than just fundamental versions that completely change how we think about these LLMs.
Yeah, and we'll see. We have three events coming in the next couple of weeks, right? We have, in theory, we have GPT-5. I guess I don't know exactly when that's coming, but it seems like it's soon.
Right.
Ish. We have a Microsoft coming in April.
With Bill.
No,
yep.
May, whenever. They're coming soon. And then we have Apple, probably in June with something. So that's in a couple months. I mean, those are the three leaders here. We'll see if they deliver something that's exciting, which they could do, or not. It's tricky. I have another data point I actually picked up was I was doing my China newsletter and I came across the IPO prospectus for a Chinese LLM company called Mobvoi. They filed to go public in Hong Kong, and so this is the first generative AI company. They build their own model. They license it to enterprises and they have a consumer service as well. But it's the first time we've seen public financials for an LLM company, a generative AI company. And it was, one, I encourage people to go look up the perspective, because there's a lot of interesting data points. They have some real solid data points about the size of the market, both in China and in globally. It's an interesting read for that. But their financials are, you know, they generated, I think, 500 million in $500 million renminbi in revenue last year. So that's, you know, what's that? $300 million? Mm-hmm. That's $80 million. But they had losses of 370 million renminbi. So 500, 300, you know, they're losing a lot of money on not a huge amount of revenue. And it was interesting. And their business model is very, very geared towards providing the enterprise. That's the bulk of the revenue comes from these models that they license enterprises, presumably to do chatbots and stuff.
Right. Right.
But I think it's fascinating. It's an actual real data point about how people are monetizing these generative AI models. And it's okay. It's just not that exciting. And it's incredibly expensive.
Right. So the other thing, though, that I think is interesting about this is, and I think this point kind of reinforces this infrastructure point of AI for the AI lift. But I sort of thought that companies like Microsoft would have actually gotten more software AI lift than they did. If you just kind of look at where they've been hanging, some of these kind of ridiculous market sizing things we've talked about, where someone will say like, the software market for AI is going to be 2 trillion. Like, cool. That's great. But like, but what's interesting is you haven't seen that come to software companies. Like, you're getting some of that to hardware. And again, I say NVIDIA, the primary beneficiary of that, but even their spillover to AMD, there was spillover to ARM that's sort of recorrected. So, but you see my point, like those same kind of weird valuations haven't come to a company like Microsoft, who again is doing Copilot, who's investing in heavily with Azure, even Amazon, right? So I'm intrigued by, we still haven't seen that dynamic come to software. I assume we will at some point, but I think that just again goes to show perhaps where consensus is that we're at in the cycle, and it's still a very compute, hardware, networking, infrastructure, not yet to software type of this cycle.
Yeah, Sequoia, the venture fund, put out a blog piece a week or two ago pointing that out. They said, you know, they calculated that the industry, the tech industry collectively, had spent $50 billion in the last year on AI hardware, you know, NVIDIA mostly, NVIDIA and memory, $50 billion. But the revenue associated with that was, I don't remember the exact number, but sort of like hundreds of millions, right?
Right.
Orders of magnitude below the spend. And they were asking that same question: is what's, you know, where's the software? Where are the applications?
Yeah.
What's right? What's going to justify that ROI?
Yeah, and I do think that's the fuzziest part of this analysis. But I think given how much it costs to train and or license and or inference these models, that for a lot of businesses, where I think we see this go first in enterprise, those are investments in productivity, right? They're not necessarily looking at that and saying, "Hey, I'm gonna make money on this. I'm trying to make my business, my employees more productive, my business more competitive." We don't know when their brain, like, what the value of return is to justify the hardware spend yet. And I'm sure most of them are doing that analysis. I've heard that. I don't know. They don't know the answer, but that's where rubber gonna meet the road is I got it costs me this much, so I need this much return in order for this to be sustainable. And as we know, costs are still very high to train, fine tune, inference these models. When we get out of this, I imagine we'll see a more better balance of economics. I think the hard part is the timing. Like, we can't predict when that's going to be. I'm pretty sure it's still not in the next 12 months, but that's kind of the broader challenge, is really when could we see maturity in this space, because it's so early. And I still, again, to this conversation, I still, like, part of me just wants to argue, as fast as it's moving, like we talked about, this may take a whole lot longer than anybody really realizes.
You know, it's interesting because we're talking about costs. And one of the things I noticed in the last few days is, since that sort of spooky fall off late last week, the street has been sort of searching for explanations after the fact. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's percolated up now is that everyone is worried about energy. Like suddenly energy is the new bottleneck. There's not enough energy. And one, I just want to point out that like this is exactly what Bitcoin and crypto went through 4 years ago. Like it was hot and then it started falling off and then people started talking about energy. Like there's a cycle to bubbles, right? The bubble side of AI. And again, AI is very different than crypto, but the hype cycle is very similar. But energy is like this big topic that everyone's talking about. And it confuses me because one is we've known for a long time that energy is the biggest constraint in any kind of data center, AI or not. And the other thing too is people seem to treat like hardware and energy as separate things. Oh, we solved the hardware problem. Now we got to solve the energy problem. And I think that misses the fundamental point that it's really it's the same, it's different sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Because people are now worried, oh, we're going to have to spend so much energy to do AI. Wait a second. 18 months ago, the things that we were talking about AI were impossible, right? And what happened was there was a convergence of Moore's Law and NVIDIA Silicon with improvements in the model. We got to the point where we could actually do neural network machine learning for the first time. Right? People have been talking about this stuff for 30 years. It was computationally impossible because it would just require so much compute. And we've finally gotten the software and the hardware at a point where it is possible to do things that we've been talking about for decades. Right. And so to say, oh no, now we're gonna run out of energy, I think that just it misses the whole point. Like 2 years ago, it was an impossible amount of energy. It's now a lot of energy, but it's a possible amount. And if you forecast out a little bit, it's easy to see, like, it gets easier, right? We still have Moore's Law working for us. We're going to get Blackwell will go down to 2 nanometer and whatever.
Right.
And the software side, like I think that's why Llama 3 is really important, is because models that we were doing 18 months ago were very computationally expensive. Now they're much less so. You can do so much more. And I think we're going to keep moving down that curve pretty radically. So I don't like that energy is a constraint. Energy is the bottleneck for gonna hold back AI. Like it's like we're improving that so rapidly.
Right.
I'm not worried about energy.
I think the point that gets missed, and this is a fundamental assumption of most people's AI hardware diffusion thesis, is, you know, over the course of time, and there is a lot of truth to this. I don't think we can really wrap a true percentage on this because we just don't know. But over the course of time, you'll have the same or more compute at less energy. Like, we get efficiencies on both ends of that spectrum. Right. You know, again, it's really hard to predict, like, okay, are we talking like there's a balancing there of a sweet spot of performance to wattage? Is that 3 years? Is that 4 years? But the fundamental assumption is these things will continue to diffuse, infrastructure will continue to be mature, and we will see increases in that, so that what it costs to train a model in energy and performance today, let's say that's 90 to 100 days, you might be able to train a model that's 10x bigger than that in 5 years in the same amount of time, hypothetically speaking. But that's happening. It's just, again, those cycles are hard to predict, but that is where we're going.
Well, I heard a comparison today. People were saying, oh my goodness, B200, the new NVIDIA stack chip, it's 1,000 watts, which is 50% more than H100, right? And okay, 1,000 watts is a lot, but it's 50% more than H100. It's one, it's double the size. So you double the size, but you're only using 50% more power, and it's much more than double the performance. So that's actually not a bad thing. It's 1,000 watts. You can't fit that many in a data center. But still, like, you're already getting those. You're already getting those performance gains you were just talking about. Like, it's they're coming. They're steady.
Yeah. And so, I think the performance gains that we talk about is really just the ability to handle at a compute level. And this applies to memory, right? We'll see the same thing in memory efficiencies. Better memory stacks and designs will be able to handle far more LLMs and inference in memory at lower costs. I know that's a huge initiative from Micron and others trying to more efficiency and memory energy. Like everybody knows this. So yes, we are up against, it's going to take a lot of power, but, and I think Jensen kind of hit this on the head and said several times about this point, but he did at GTC, you know, he said, listen, the reality is these things do get more efficient. We get 2, 3x, 4x more power at 5 to 10x less, you know, types of, or 10, 30%, whatever that is, less energy. And those gains keep happening with innovation in semiconductors. It's just, again, how long? We don't know. Maybe longer than everybody thinks. Maybe it's an annual 2-year cycle similar to Moore's law, but, you know, in terms of compute, we don't know, but absolutely that's a dynamic that, that will come. So I guess what would be interesting to this point though, is the evidence would be, let's say, what were you and I talking about a couple weeks ago, that, that data center becomes anywhere from like what, 3 to 4% of the grid. Okay. So let's just assume then that number doesn't go up, or it goes up a percent or two, but the amount of compute increases holding at that same percent. And that theoretically would be the proof that what we're saying about is true.
Right. I mean, I think we're already seeing signs of that. I think Blackwell demonstrates that. And I think, I mean, this is just semiconductors. And as much as we're worried about Moore's law slowing, it's still got many more legs to go. Right. And I think what we're seeing, my suspicion, what we're seeing from NVIDIA is they I think they're on an annual cadence, roughly.
Roughly.
1 year they'll have a new architecture. The next year they'll shrink it.
Right, right.
It's almost like a clock.
Right.
There's a tick and there's a tock.
Right. What an analogy.
And it's almost like we've heard this before. I dare somebody to say that I want to see NVIDIA admit that that's exactly what they're doing. It's TikTok. It's Intel.
Never.
It's the old Intel. But it's exactly what it is, right? And it's for the same reasons, right? You can,
right,
like Moore's law or whatever it is they're doing, it takes a while to get that architecture. You want to improve the architecture, you have bigger chip. The next year you shrink it. And that's sort of natural design cycles take about that long.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to keep that going for a while more. For at least a few years, that's easy to predict.
Yeah.
And I think that we'll continue to see these kinds of performance, power performance gains continue for a while still.
Yeah.
Now we just need to get the software to be interesting.
Agreed. And I think that's actually, I mean, I guess if you think about this in terms of how a company like NVIDIA, even Intel, AMD, Apple, anybody in core compute thinks about architecture, is for the most part, those, I'd like to see a chart at some point to see how much this is true, but essentially I feel like architecture changes tend to align more with full node step changes. Because if you're just doing like just an example of this, right? Let's say you did, you know, there was a couple different flavors of 5 nanometer, and then there was 2 to 3 flavors of 4 nanometer. Well, there's no point in changing the architecture to an iteration of 4 nanometer or 3 nanometer, et cetera, right? It's better to do an arch jump with a true node transition. And those don't necessarily happen every year. Those are 2-ish, 3-year cycles because of how much money it costs to jump into that architecture. And so Apple's kind of seen that pattern. I could tie that together of an arch change to a CPU or a GPU to one fundamental node jump versus, you know, it's the third flavor of 4 nanometer. I don't need to make an arch change. I just modify and tweak that in order to optimize. And so those patterns line up, I think, with manufacturing more so than people recognize.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you shrink it 1 year and the other year you make other changes to improve the performance, and how deep that is, we can debate. But like, I think that's the cadence we're going to see for the next few years. And that's, you know, nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's healthy.
Yeah, agreed. In terms of where, what do you think things go from here in terms of some of these expectations? I think a core question is, have we, everything we just said sets the stage for perhaps people have rethought and reset, and I think that's fine. But is there potential that that's still not true. If somebody comes out and like blows the door off earnings, they're like, no, run again, throw all the money in this fast paced horse because outsized growth is coming.
I think the sell-off last week took a fair amount of pressure off of NVIDIA, right? That like they're, whenever they report, I guess next month, they will, like, they don't have to beat crazy. They just have to have good numbers and a good guide. And I, with the sell-off, I think that makes it much, much easier for them to be seen in a positive light and the stock gets back to where it was. I guess your question is, what if they like do a massive beat and raise like they did?
Yeah.
Like they've done right. A few times in the last year.
Or a couple stocks, not just NVIDIA, a couple names. Like what if that happens again at a couple places?
Yeah, but who? Like I mean, that's one of the things that's sort of constrained here is that AI is very constrained to a small number of companies.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so I guess AMD could have a huge quarter on MI300 sales. That would.
Right.
But I don't think that would. I don't think that would alter the broader market. Right. I think that'd be really good for an AMD stock. I don't think it would have people reassess their view of AI.
Okay.
I think if NVIDIA is such a bellwether. Supermicro gets overfollowed, so maybe that too. There's a few others. Some of the memory, you know, the memory guys have good numbers, and they point to data centers. The reason for it, that's another possibility. Do we restart the bubble? It's possible. I think it takes a little bit more than just really good numbers from a couple companies. I think it has to be other stuff going on in the market too. So
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's just a few fundamentals. I mean, you look at, ASML, Avago, Marvell, others that are in that sort of space, like everybody's corrected some, not a ton. NVIDIA, just because it was so high relative to its performance, but a lot of everything's corrected some off its peaks. But at the same time, it's kind of like, even Smith Micro, right? I mean, or Super Micro, they came in and there was a, wow, it's going to be a huge year. We're guiding up, you know? And so those are the kind of things where I'm like, well, there's some rebalancing, but at the same time, like we know AI servers are flying off the shelf. Somebody could come in and have a surprise and then boom, right? It's just like, oh, there it is all over again.
Yeah, I think, who knows? Like, I think, there's other stuff taking place sort of beyond semis, right? There's this whole inflation dynamic, right. What's going on with interest rates. I think if the inflation numbers come in a little bit higher, that makes people think that if inflation comes in lower, unemployment is higher, I think that makes people think that the Fed is going to cut rates sooner rather than later. That excites the market. And then NVIDIA comes with a blowout quarter. Yeah, then we're back to the races. But there's a lot of things that have to line up just right. So
I think there's.
I don't think we're done with the AI hype cycle.
Yes.
I don't think we're done with the hype cycle, but I think it's right. Sort of it got a little muted.
Yeah, agreed. Well, fun things to watch. There's a couple earnings this week, which I'm sure will shed a little more color for us next week as we move into the next. What is it, 2 to 3 weeks of earning periods where that'll be a continuing conversation, but more will be learned. So as always, interesting times to be documenting in the state of AI and the broader semiconductor world. So on that note, thanks for listening, everybody. Tune into the next episode where perhaps we'll talk a little bit more about the data center energy stuff with some recent conversations that we've been having or not. We'll see what the cycle brings. So thanks for listening and tune in next week.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Goodbye.